Hello, I am Trey Ratcliffe, and welcome to my rather unusual podcast I call Walk and Talk with Trey. The show is mostly about creativity and consciousness, but the conversation often delves into other far-flung, erudite subjects, and there's plenty of silly stuff to balance all that out. All of these were originally recorded on a 360-degree video camera that shoots in 5.7K. I hold it in front of me while I walk and talk with interesting people. You're now listening to the audio version that is more convenient in many situations, but keep in mind, you can always jump over to YouTube and watch the 361 too. It's fun because you can move the camera all around. If you get tired of watching me blab away, just move the camera around and look at all the beautiful scenery around us. Note that the show is ad-free. If you like it, then I have something fun you can do. I have this members-only section of the blog called the Stuck in Customs Passport. You can get there by going to stuckincustoms.com/passport. For just the cost of a few cups of coffee per month, you can support the show and get access to over 100 different videos. These are inspirational videos, how-to videos, and filled with all sorts of mind vitamins. My goal with all these things is to spread consciousness and fun and love around the world. Maybe that sounds silly to you, but I hope it doesn't. Anyway, please come subscribe. I appreciate you. This is part two of my walk and talk with Kevin Kelly, where we talk about his really cool concept of the 10,000 year library. This one picks up after we stopped for some ice cream. I was walking with Kevin and Aaron Lammer, and I have never known these guys to turn down an ice cream. Anyway, part two coming in hot. All right, hello everybody. Welcome to part two of our discussion about the 10,000 year library. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. And we're back on the Camino de Santiago, walking along a pilgrimage towards the city of Santiago. Beautiful summer day, fall day maybe. Vineyards on the left here, and we're going to talk about some highfalutin ideas. One of them is libraries. What do we do with libraries, and where are they going?
That's right, and we're rejoined by the great Aaron Lammer from aaronlammer.com.
I apologize for picking my nose just now in
the It's okay.
It wasn't
in 3D. Picking your nose in 3D, that's
all right. You're just keeping it real like you do. And people can listen to your podcast where? AaronLammer.com?
Just go to AaronLammer.com and they're all linked to that.
And by the way, we can listen to your Cool Tools podcast where?
It's cool-tools.org or com and or kk.org.
kk.org, awesome. Anyway, welcome to season 33, episode 8. If you didn't see part 1, it might be a little difficult to find because we use a strange indexing for these episodes. We ended last time where he talked about his library that he's already put on top of the mountain. The idea is that anyone go up there, sort of open source space. They own private land in Nevada. And a little bit like a, I don't know, I hate to compare it to a permanent Burning Man or something because it's not really a society, but it's a place where people go build things that hopefully last 10,000 years. So he talked about his, he talked about what you want to do. And then we stopped to get ice cream, and it completely threw us off our game. Chocolate ice cream. So I was describing, by the way, I told Hugh Howey about this, and he's like, oh, I want to do a library there. It's really got me thinking. So he goes, I'll probably do something with a silo.
I'm going to say one thing I'm pushing for in the site with all the libraries is a pop-up ice cream truck. It's the greatest thing, especially I'm thinking in the desert, kind of out there. It's real dusty. You just come through an oasis and get an ice cream sandwich. Who doesn't want that?
So here's my nascent, inchoate idea for my own library. And when I say it's sort of a mausoleum, I don't mean to say it like it's a solipsistic, self-important thing, but it's more like a gift to the world in that I would build like a cozy cabin, like a real-life cabin that's, you know, tangible with wood and like warm colors and stone inside, like a comfy almost reading room, like a stone fireplace and like a easy chair and a couch and stools, and then all around the walls I would have what are my 100 most influential books. Probably 50 fiction, and 50 nonfiction. I remember when I was at university, I was like getting into all these books and stuff, and I met this awesome old guy that I really respected. He goes, Trey, if you want to be a really intelligent man, you have to read these 100 books. I was like, okay, it was nice to have a list. There weren't a lot of curated lists. The only curated list you got in school were from your teacher, who, had their own baggage or whatever, the stuff that they were into. But to have this curated list was really nice. So anyway, some of those I liked, some of those I didn't. And that would be what would cover the wall. So it, maybe if people want to be creative, or they like my work, or they're a fan, it would be like the bibliography of my life. If they want to kind of have any insight into me to help them with their lives, their creative lives, they could read, they could sit there all day and read these books in this nice little area. And then, because you could only have one or two people in there at a time, right? And that doesn't really scale. So right next door to it would be maybe a slightly bigger room or something where you could go in and you could do the same thing, but like in a VR world, right? So you could, it could scale up, and so you could have hundreds or thousands of people inside the same place, and maybe one or two people in the actual place.
I got that. All right.
That's my...
Sign me up.
My first idea. It's being improved a little bit, I think. So let's talk about current libraries, which I think are a little hit or miss. Kevin, if you're dictator of all libraries, let's not say around the world, let's say, it doesn't matter, in America,
right.
You're in charge, what would you do with these once hallowed places?
That's a really, really good and difficult question, and my views have changed a little bit on that. I have a personal library of two stories. I work inside a two-story library. It has, maybe 3,000 or 4,000 volumes. And at one point, I decided that the future of libraries was digital, that there really wasn't much point in having paper books, and I was going to get rid of them and just have a digital version of them, and that would be enough. And I changed my mind when I went to this other private library run by this couple, Rick Preminger and his wife Megan, and they had a private library that filled an office space.
Look at this speaking of mausoleums.
We
speak of them, and they are here.
They're here.
That's a vertical mausoleum.
Image of that. That's too hard to walk by.
Yeah, I will too. Do one of these numbers. By the way, if this is your first time watching a 360 video, you can just grab the screen and turn it around and see everything that we're seeing. Right now, we're kind of more on streets. Most of this has been little trails through the forest. We never know what we're going to see next. You kind of caught us at a...
This is a little city of cemeteries.
Come for the forest, stay for the mausoleums.
Mausoleums, yeah. And I changed my mind when I saw this private library, because they had not just books, they had a lot of obscure periodicals, a lot of very interesting cultural ephemera. And I walked in and I felt that this was like this power center, this vibration of knowledge power that was concentrated here in a way that you would not get on a flash drive. And I decided then that I was not going to get rid of my paper books. And so, in a curious kind of a way, even though paper libraries are kind of like dinosaurs, I think we're going to stop printing cheap books on paper because they're going to become more and more expensive. I think that having a library that has paper is in very many ways kind of very retro, and they're not easy to use, but there's also another way in which they're very, very powerful because they never go obsolete. They are always readable. You don't need special software. They're actually more durable than digital formats, and I think, to answer the question, I think I would actually try to make better libraries with paper books, not because they're going to solve the problem, but because they have a very different solution. And I think the thing for libraries is probably to specialize, to take, because you can't really be everything to everybody, you probably have to take some aspect of culture, some aspect of knowledge, and decide that you're going to specialize in it. And I think that is what I would do with libraries, is have them, like we say with any kind of business, is you want to have some kind of competitive advantage. You want to have something that you makes you unique. And then I would recommend to libraries, rather than trying to be general purpose ones, a general library for a town, it's like, no, take something and really dive into it.
It's a good idea. I like that idea. What would you do if you're a dictator of the world? I know you have these delusions of grandeur.
I have a similar foundational myth as Kevin, which is I was all digital books. And I harangued people, I ranted at them, I acted unpleasantly as if I could perceive the future about it. And it's probably the biggest mistake I've made. Both in what I thought for the world and for myself. So I realized at first myself, I stopped reading digital books. I started really enjoying paper books. And I said, I have to rethink the way I've been talking about this stuff. And I believe really strongly in representing things in their native format of their time. So I was talking to Hugh about records. And he said, yeah, aren't you sad the album's dying out? I'm like, well, actually, the LP is a format that has two sides. And there's a transition between those songs. That's the format. So if you want to listen to music from that time, I'm not trying to be a purist and say you can't understand this if you stream it. But that there are these details to it. And I think we lived in this time of printed books. And if you get a thumb drive that has all of them on it, you have not captured that time.
That's right.
It doesn't really say anything about what the formats of the future will be, but libraries are supposed to capture the formats of the past, not the formats of the future. So I would try to preserve these formats as best I could. And I do agree with Kevin that, you know, you don't want to go to a museum that's museum. You want to go to the museum of folk art, museum. And increased specialization, I think, would draw more people and create touristic centers in which people could go to a library that really caught their interest. There's a place in Brazil that I want to go, which is the largest record collection in the world. And he is turning it into a public library.
Vinyl records.
And creating touristic centers around incredible collections seems like a way forward for the library. I don't know what we do with every community's little library. Maybe we find specialists who want to come in and create these personal shrine archives in strange little towns dedicated to a specific topic.
That would be so cool if every little town had a little different library that was at some kind of unique advantage, and you spend your time driving around going to these cool libraries.
Upstate New York has the fly fishing library of the world.
Right.
I like that idea. And if I were in charge, I would do, I think, a combination of both of yours, and I would take every library and split it in half. And it's all part of the same whole, but half of the space is made for anyone to come in, anyone for the public, to be subsidized by the city. Libraries are already subsidized by the city. And, you know, there's 10 gigabit access and lots of places. It's almost like a giant Starbucks that might even have, like, subsidized coffee or something. And it's a place for you to go and be on the internet. Then the other half would be, like, obscure books that are inspirational, like no books about facts, maybe a few books about facts, because all those facts are much easier to identify on the internet. There's really no advantage to having a thing that's just like fact after fact after fact. But like inspirational things, fictional books. Oh, we got people behind us here. Coming through. Coming through hot.
Am I allowed to make a counterpoint? I always believe that in podcasts, if people disagree with each other, that makes
good.
The best.
A little conflict is good.
I think it's silly when people try to create a community center out of thin air. It reminds me of when churches started having video game night at the church, and they said, oh, the young people want to come to the church now. Now that we have video game night, it's like, young people would want to go to the video game night anywhere. I don't necessarily see the role of libraries to abandon their entire original purpose and put in high-speed internet and video games and movie nights and sort of just become a generic community center.
Every time I think about it, I think we take it for granted that we have decent incomes, we have high bandwidth all the time.
Right.
And like, not everyone has that. And access to information is a great equalizer for others. And sometimes they just don't have, they get a little bit of data on their phone and they're staring at this tiny little thing.
But right.
If you want a big media room with big screens, fiber connection, and yeah, so that would be kind of cool to have state-of-the-art connection. But that is, that's a challenge. But the other thing about libraries is they usually come with librarians. And so rather than just talking about the box and the shelter and the wood and the building, what you may want to have is a librarian. And that librarian today may be kind of like your power user. It's like there are some people who are really good at searching Google and or, you know, searching BitTorrent or whatever. And you might want somebody on the premise who's going to show you the ropes of how to search, how to find things, how to critically think about things. I mean, it may be that the library becomes a librarian. Which is a person who knows things, who's being staffed, who show you around, to give you pointers, to, you know, search.
We're cool.
I'm giving you guys space.
Oh, okay. Hi. So, I know that when, I've hired two librarians. My first two personal assistants were researchers, and they were research librarians. And it was very deliberate because they are so good at uncovering things. They understand how things are organized. They understand books. And of course, by the way, we think that everything, all the information is on the internet. It is not. It is way not.
Even if it was once on the internet, it's not necessarily on the internet anymore.
Exactly. And even if you could say it's on there, sometimes it's in, you know, it's kind of buried deep. It doesn't show up at the top of Google. And so getting around this ever-expanding universe is a skill that can be taught, and it's a skill that most people, including me, don't have fully. And you can use the expertise of professionals. And that expertise could be not just in searching for things, but just, you know, helping you learn. There will be people who are helping you learn how to learn. And that may be what a library becomes, is it becomes a place where the librarian is.
Yeah, I really like that idea. I feel like the internet is both more incomplete than people think, and more lacking in an instruction manual.
Right.
Like, when you give people research tasks, people start and stop at Wikipedia. Wikipedia is the only sort of general research method that people are familiar with. And I would take a class at my local library in research techniques and library science. I think another way to think about it is maybe all those, should we call them librarians, or should we call them like neo-librarians?
Librarians
2.0 are part of a national network that is working collaboratively to bring things online and make them accessible. So if you're working at the Fly Fishing Library of America, you're trying to make documents, books, etc., that information available. That's part of your job. And then you're networked to all these other librarians, so if someone comes in one of their libraries, you can say, hey, you know, you really should talk to this librarian at this library. That person really would know how to get into this.
I like that. All right, well, Kevin, I think we made a pretty good choice bringing on Aaron as a co-host here. We'll be discussing your compensation package after you walk away.
I just want water.
We've got some other things like this we've done as we've walked around the Camino. You can see I've done one with Aaron where we're talking about his long form podcast, his recreational drug use podcast.
The ones with Kevin. Don't watch.
And cryptocurrency. So we talked a lot about cryptocurrency. So you go see his plans to overthrow world governments in that one. And then Kevin and I have done a lot of these. We talked about AI. We talked about Burning Man.
10,000-year clock.
10,000-year clock. All kinds of good stuff. So go check those out too. All right, guys. All right. Love you and see you in the next episode.
Bye. Bye.